Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the November 18th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. And we have a lady.
Let me say, it is my high honor and distinct privilege to introduce to you the President-elect of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
Well, good evening, everyone. I just thought I would open the show with a clip that nobody ever expected to hear, which was the announcement by Mike Pence that Donald Trump was elected President of the United States, and we're going to have a little discussion on the election tonight. But first, some administrative things. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat. To call into the show, the number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. I wanted to do a show post the election when I was sufficiently recovered from the emotional roller coaster that I went through. But first, just a note on the show going forward. I'm going to be experimenting with a kind of revised show format, which will be a shorter show, easier to produce, simplified production. We'll do basically a podcast format where I speak to a few topics, and then if guests call in, we'll have a chat session with the guests, and hopefully that'll make it easier to get these shows on the air more frequently. And it will also be stimulating enough with the live participation. So I hope that will go well. And I'm thinking that Friday nights will, either Friday or Monday night will be my kind of preferred show nights. And I'm not saying I'd do it every week, but I'm going to try it and do it at least every 2 weeks. So that's the plan going forward. Well, what a campaign it was. That's why I entitled the show, "That Was the Campaign That Was." I mean, this was an incredible campaign season. The Republican Party, in particular, went through the most divisive election that we've seen since 1964. I was only a kid then, and I haven't. I do remember I was following politics a little bit back then, and I followed it ever since in my adult years, but I haven't seen anything like what we went through on the Republican side in that 50-year period. So I wanted to speak to that a little bit because obviously a lot of emotions are still pretty raw at this point. If you take part took part in social media, even in a modest way like I do, you came in for a lot of personal abuse and insults, depending on what candidate you supported. And if you supported Trump, you were going to get even more than if you supported some of the others. And the amount of vitriol and abuse directed at Donald Trump himself was just simply incredible. I have never seen anything so over the top. A lot of people who I'd call them sort of right-leaning internet celebrities kind of practiced a lot of emotional blackmail, trying to shame people out of the candidate that they were supporting, especially if they were supporting Trump. And then the whole righty blogosphere got infected with an enormous amount of groupthink, and that groupthink on certain of the sites, and Red State comes to mind in particular, simply would only tolerate one point of view, and that was the Never Trump point of view. And anybody who dissented from that was, you know, mocked and ridiculed and had their motives questioned and whatever. And the whole thing left a very bad taste in my mouth, especially since Red State was founded on the principle that, you know, in the Republican Party, we can differ about candidates during the primary part of it, but we always support the Republican in the general, because that's the way to bring about a more conservative orientation in the government. So you can imagine the shock that some of the alumni from that site felt when some of its leading luminaries, in fact, became supporters of Hillary Clinton. It was the most amazing thing to witness. So that's kind of the framework that, you know, is that we're in this post-election recovery phase. That's my frame of mind. Is I'm still meditating on that whole experience. And on a personal note, going into this election season last year in 2015, I was a Scott Walker supporter because I thought that he would be able to withstand the type of abuse that was going to be hurled at any Republican candidate, given the aggressiveness of the Clinton machine and given the fact that the media is so in the tank for the Democrats. I see we have some callers. I'm going to recognize you shortly. I just want to get to a logical stopping point here. And, well, of course, Scott Walker kind of flamed out pretty early in the process, and then I started really taking a look at Donald Trump. And Trump just exceeded my wildest expectations. The fear that I had with him initially was that he, you know, was going to be like the typical billionaire mogul who was not going to adapt well to the rough and tumble of the political process, kind of like Ross Perot, that when the going got rough, he just couldn't take kindly to being questioned by opponents or the press, and he would, you know, pick up his ball and go home. Well, that didn't happen. He had just tremendous staying power, and he had the ability and the tactical and strategic smarts to outflank the mainstream media. He brought a clarity on issues that needed attention that was astounding, issues that had been festering for years that hardly anybody else would barely talk about, and I'll just list them here. You know, the endless wars that the United States was getting into without winning any permanent victories or permanent settlements, our whole disastrous trade policy, our whole disastrous open borders immigration policy, the whole undermining of national sovereignty, and the challenges to the American middle class, which the media insists on calling the white working class, which is, again, another example of their bias. But it's the challenge to the middle class of all races and backgrounds posed by globalization. And Trump was able to, you know, cover those issues and cover them very well. He did outreach more than we have seen a Republican do in decades to disaffected voters, whether they be Republicans looking for a switch in the big government philosophy, from the big government philosophy that George Bush had put into practice. He outreached to independents. He outreached to Democrats. He outreached to blue-collar workers. He outreached to white-collar workers. He outreached to minorities, and especially African-Americans. He did not use social wedge issues the way some of the ideological social conservatives used to do on issues like gay marriage. And the result of that was the most successful electoral vote showing that a Republican has had since 1988. That's almost 30 years. And in my opinion, you know, we all know how divisive the Republican primary process was, but in retrospect, I don't think that Cruz or Rubio could have withstood the attacks of the Hillary Clinton dirty tricks machine. Cruz proved himself to be notoriously thin-skinned when it came to personal insults and abuse, at which the Clinton people excelled. And Rubio was often extremely immature in his actions during his primary campaign, and I think both would have been eaten alive by the Clintonistas allied with the mainstream media. As far as the more established candidates, Jeb Bush and Kasich, neither of those showed any grasp of the anxiety that was affecting the middle class in this country, and I don't think either one of them would have given the voters a compelling reason to go vote Republican. I think Clinton would have just won by default. So that's kind of the first part of the program I wanted to go into, you know, how I saw the election and why I supported who I supported. And before I go into the second part, which is the role of the media and the changes in the media that occurred in this election cycle, I'll recognize my callers and I'll also take a look at chat. And I'm working with a somewhat malfunctioning computer, so if the production's a little sloppy, I just hope you bear with me. I bought a Toshiba late last year, and I'm telling you, never again. Never again, because it's going to have to be replaced, and it's barely a year old. I see area code 907. That. 907, can you hear me? Switchboard is, I think he's just in listening mode.
Is that you, Titan Tomatoes?
Ah, there he is, the infamous John.
I'm trying to be good.
Okay, well, I did want to say hello, just to tell you I noticed you were there, and of course, since you're a special guest from the show Free Fire Friday, you and only you will get an introductory theme song.
Oh, nice. Oh, this will be it's extra special. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir. That is me at Science Tomatoes. Thank you. Thank you. Very
that
nice.
Is you.
Very kind. Very kind.
And for our archive listeners, Johnny is the host of Free Fire Friday, which is on at 8 o'clock Central Time on Blog Talk Radio, co-hosted by Richard Disney. And that show, as you might infer from the title, deals with firearms and all types of things related to firearms. So for you Second Amendment folks out there, it's a good listen. And I'll also recognize 775. Who is that?
Yes, sir. It is me.
It is Richard
yes.
Disney.
Yeah.
The long-suffering producer.
But I am rehired, so I'm rehired.
Johnny has come to terms with your lavish salary demands, and you are rehired. That is good. He finally came through on the dedicated dressing room in the limo, which is, you know, about time.
It's a necessity, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, since I have fellow radio hosts on the air, this is good because I'm going to go into my second observation about the election, and that is the enormous changes that occurred in people's perception of the media. Of course, everybody knew the mainstream media was very biased liberal, biased Democrat, and above all, biased Hillary. But no one had any concept of just how bad it was until the whole WikiLeaks thing spilled the beans, where you saw this just incredible amount of collusion between established journalists and the Clinton campaign, to a degree that everybody just thought it was bias before, but not collusion, outright, blatant, cheating collusion with, you know, leaked debate questions and planted questions and articles submitted to the Clinton campaign for editing and the whole all the crap that occurred.
Yeah.
With the mainstream media. And then we saw the people in the mainstream media who were more conservatively inclined, jump ship and basically do everything that they could to sabotage Donald Trump, because they didn't like him for personal reasons, or they didn't like his marriages, or they thought he was crude or vulgar, or he didn't have enough government experience, or whatever it was. And these are the folks at the National Review and at Weekly Standard and some of the, you know, well-known columnists like George Will. These people are supposed to be on our side, and they did everything possible to sabotage the Republican candidate. And then as far as new media was concerned, we saw the eclipse of many of the, what I would call the first generation of alternative media people who were supposed to be somewhat favorably inclined to conservatism, and especially think of the website Red State, Eric Erickson, Ben Shapiro, again, all sabotaging, you know, Donald Trump, maligning him, maligning his supporters, questioning our motives, questioning our intelligence, questioning our morality, and what have you. And again, the whole thing was incredible to behold. It was very demoralizing at certain parts of the campaign to have to, you know, fight these kind of headwinds. And then kind of the silver lining was that we saw sort of the emergence of second-generation conservative alternative media and a revival or an increase in influence of maybe what I would call the first-generation sites, first-generation site like Drudge, which he performed, you know, really good work in getting our message across this cycle. And some of the people I have in mind for the emerging second generation were, Bill Still, Breitbart, Cernovich, Milo Yiannopoulos over at Breitbart itself, Diamond and Silk on YouTube. These people did a very good job of getting a wide circulation for their messages and attracting a larger audience. And on that note, I'm going to play a little clip from Bill Still, who I found just enormously informative And people like him were the reasons we started seeing coverage of things that the mainstream media would not touch, like Hillary Clinton's infamous temper tantrums. And here's a short clip of one that she threw after an interview with Matt Lauer, so-called commander-in-chief debate, where she did not show up to maximum advantage in this interview, and she started to blame him and her staff. So just 90 seconds of Bill Still.
Interim DNC chairman Donna Brazile, the first black woman to hold the position, was singled out by Hillary during the rant. She screamed at Donna, "I'm so sick of your face. You stare at the wall like a brain-dead buffalo while letting that effing Lauer get away with this. What are you good for, really? Get to work. Janitoring this mess. Do I make myself clear?"
So judgment is a key.
Temperament and judgment, yes.
A female NBC executive said that Donna Brazile looked at Mrs. Clinton and never flinched, which seemed to enrage Hillary all the more. The executive continued, "It was the most awful and terrible and racist display, such a profane meltdown I've ever witnessed from anyone, and I will never forget it."
So judgment is a key.
Temperament and judgment, yes.
"That woman should never see the inside of the Oval Office, I can tell you that. She was unhinged and just continued to verbally abuse everyone. She was out of control." Why did Lauer ask his rogue question? According to sources close to Lauer, because the American people deserve an answer from the former Secretary of State.
Now, having said all this, why aren't I 50 points ahead?
Here's your problem. Someone set this thing to evil.
I'm still reporting from Washington. Good day.
So that's the kind of journalism we simply don't see. I mean, they went into every nook and cranny of Donald Trump's life and often invented stuff that didn't really happen. But as far as Hillary, you never heard a thing like that from the mainstream media. Everything that we learned about Hillary, we learned from the alternate media, the alternative media, the new media, and above all, from WikiLeaks. And
but a minute. Can I say something real quick?
Sure.
I didn't know if I was on there or not. Not only that, but they forgot all about when Hillary was in office for 8 years with Bill. They forgot about the scandal with Monica. They totally forgot about the scandal with what was the name of that?
Whitewater.
Vince Foster.
Whitewater. Yeah.
Whitewater.
Travelgate. Yeah.
Travel, there were so many different things that were still brushed under the rug.
Gore soliciting money in China for their campaign.
Right,
in the midterm.
And Hillary's a loser. She's a loser. You know why she's a loser? Because she is a loser. She married a loser. She's a loser.
Right.
You know, and that's part of what I think happened. These people that the millennials, they don't know anything about that. And they don't care if old Bill's sitting in the freaking White House getting a BJ by Monica, right? Okay, this I know you're showing explicit, I'm trying to hold back.
This is not explicit, Johnny. Not explicit.
Okay.
Not explicit. So, not yet, anyway.
Not. No,
I said Bravo Juliet. So,
correct.
Yeah. So the millennials don't know any of this, or they don't care, and they don't teach them in public school because we say them by the taxpayers, because the history books are flipped, but whatever. So there we go. And the older people, like, when I say older, I hate to put myself in this category. I'm 49. But us older people remember all that.
Yeah.
We got it. We understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, I
and
agree.
I think that's a point, but I'll let you go.
Millennials, I mean, I should do a show on millennials. That's an interesting subject all by itself. I mean, the millennials, especially the college-educated ones, have been in this academic bubble, which is totally dominated by the left. So their whole life experience when they became teenagers and young adults in college was, you know, drinking Barack Obama's Kool-Aid, and then in this cycle, Bernie Sanders' Kool-Aid. And they don't have any sense of history or any life experiences yet to, you know, analyze politicians. I mean, the schools have done a terrible job of teaching history and historical perspectives. So, yeah.
Italian tomatoes. The schools have done a very good job at doing exactly what the collectivists want. Exactly as designed. And here's the other thing. It's when they say that derisive term, the uneducated whites elected Trump, what I like to say is the unindoctrinated whites elected Trump. I mean, you know, the working class of all races, really, you know, but what they, you know, they're trying to use their old racist and, you know, classist terms to separate and conquer. But it's unindoctrinated people who elected Trump because they didn't go through the college indoctrination.
Well, you know, and I'm the whole, you know, it's amazing to me how this term in the post-election, the white working class, and I just hate that term because
nationalism. They're trying to use white nationalism.
What happened, what really happened, was the middle class of all races. I mean, Trump took a nice chunk of the Latino vote, and he took more African-American votes than any Republican has in like 20, 30 years.
Right.
Because all of a sudden, all the middle class people, not the working class, because we don't have an aristocracy in this country. Everybody works. The problem that we've got is everybody can't find a job. And since I have to take a break for a minute, I'm going to play one of my inventory of clips that covers this subject that the media just has no concept of, is how people live when their job prospects are insecure. And this is an old clip from The Honeymooners, but the reality that it describes is still very much with us. And I'm going to take my break while you listen to this clip. And it's a funny clip, so it's worth it. If it plays... What the hell is wrong with Ron today?
Some won't start, some won't end.
It's playing. It's just going to take a while to get to the soundtrack.
It sounds like you got Richard for a producer.
I take back my office and you have a job in the sewer. Besides, you wouldn't even fit through the manhole. Get out! Somewhere in this world, there was a straitjacket waiting for that man.
Ralph, never mind him. What are we going to do? What are we going to live on until this layoff is over? Suppose it does last a month.
Well, we just got to face it. Just have to cut out this high living.
High living?
Yes, high living. We'll just have to cut out a few luxuries.
All right. How about you giving up bowling?
Now, let's not get panicky. Let's face this thing intelligently. There's just one way to do it. Got to find out how much money we owe and how much money we have. Then we deduct the money that we owe from the money we have, and the money we have left is what we're going to live on. Now, where are the bills? And I'll start fixing it up.
In the top drawer.
Very simple. Nothing to get excited about. Just remain calm.
Well, here. That's $4.95. Here. $4.95 FD. In a hurry. All right. That comes to $186.32. Now, that's what we owe. Now, we have to deduct that from what we have. Now, this is an emergency, so we got to take into consideration all the money we have. Whatever we have in war bonds, whatever we have in a bank, whatever you have hidden around here. All the money we got in our Christmas club, all of it. Now, all of that lumped into one big ball amounts to what?
$12.83 You sure that's all of it?
That's right, Ralph. That's all, including three Indian head pennies and a 2-cent stamp.
You don't know how to handle money.
Of course I don't. I never had any practice.
You squandered it, Alice. You squandered it.
Squandered?
Yeah, squandered. I know what you do when you got money, Alice. I know what you do. You run right out and buy some clothes. That's what you do.
Don't deny it.
Don't deny it, Alice. Because I got the proof that you buy clothes. Here. Is this middle drawer yours?
That's right.
Is it yours? All right. Is it jammed with stuff, huh? Everything you bought? Now, is the bottom drawer mine?
That's right.
All right. In there is one pair of pants. Why is one pair of pants of mine in that drawer?
Because one pair of your pants is all that'll fit in there. I did not spend that money on clothes, and you know it. Besides, how far do you think $62 a week will go?
Will you shut your big mouth and stop yelling my salary? I don't want the neighbors to know how much I'm making.
$62 a week. $62 a week. $62 a week.
Will you stop that? I don't want my salary to leak out.
Your salary couldn't drip out.
Oh, you're flirting with death.
You can rant and rave and scream and yell all you want to, but it's not helping matters any. Now, let's face it, Ralph, we're in trouble. What are we going to live on until this layoff is over?
You're so smart, you tell me.
All right. I will tell you, but you're not going to like it. Now, nobody's going to give you a job, Ralph. Just like you said, they'll find out when the layoff is over you're going back to work for the bus company. But there is no reason in this whole earth why I can't get a job.
That is out. O-U-T, out. While you are my wife, you will never work. I have my pride.
I'm getting a job, Ralph, no matter what you say.
I'm not going to argue with you, Alice, because first of all, what could you possibly do to earn any money?
Well, there's plenty that I could do, Ralph. I took a commercial course in school. I still remember my shorthand and my typing. I can get a job as a secretary.
Oh, you can. And who do you think is going to do the housework around here?
Yes.
Oh, no! No, sir. No, sir. Sir, sir, sir. No, sir. Not me.
Oh, yes, you are, Ralph. I'm getting a job, and you're going to do the housework.
Ha, 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 hearty, ha, ha. Har, har, har! You hear that, Alice? Har, har, har! Har, har, I'm
afraid to see you laughing at this.
Get out! Get out! Get out! Get out!
Well, some of the time references are a little dated, but that's basically the reality if you make a few adjustments of how a lot of people are living in this economy. They, both husband and wife, if it's a married couple, are a lot of them are surviving on a collection of part-time jobs with minimal or no benefits, and they have no savings in the bank. And any layoff or anything that comes along, medical bills, anything, surprise, they have no cushion of financial security. That is the kind of economy that globalization has created for many people in this country during the past 20 years, and which accelerated during the past 8, and that's what the voters were reacting against more than anything else. You know, I mean, I'm sure they didn't like Hillary. I thought that they, I'm sure they thought she was a crook and her emails were terrible and corruption, and Bill is you know, he's a sleazebag and all of that.
But the reality the Democrats no longer speak for the working man.
And here's something else, too, I think, Italian Tomatoes, is that me being a private business owner, a welder, I have my own business, okay? And when I take my check to the bank, I don't sign it with my name. I sign it with my company name. I have to sign my check with my company name. And I ask why, and they're like, so the IRS knows how much money you got. So when somebody makes out a check to my welding company, I have to sign it with that name so that they can get their share. Their share. It's not paid my fair share. It's their share. So it's straight up theft. That is straight up theft. And them are the kind of people I think, and I didn't think there was as many of them. I mean, I'll be the first one to tell you, I thought for sure Hillary was going to win. I would have put, you know, I would have put everything on that. I thought for sure. But fortunately, for whatever reason, the private business owners and the entrepreneurs are like, hey, we're sick of sending our name to our check, and then Hillary is endorsing it underneath that, and she gets hers. So, yeah, I think that's important to recognize.
Italian Tomatoes, you said it earlier. It was where, you know, all these forces were against Trump, all of them. The Democrats, the Republican establishment, the, you know, like George Will, Ralph Peters really disappointed me going on the air and saying he was still voting for Hillary. All of these things went, and Trump still won very profoundly. It's pretty remarkable that the middle class stood up and said, we are not going collectivist. We are not going communist. We are Americans, and we're going to tick off the whole world, and we don't care, but we're freaking Americans. It's pretty refreshing, actually.
Well, I think people really had enough. I mean, you know, a lot of them bought, you know, drank the Kool-Aid that Obama was offering in 2008, and they gave him the benefit of the doubt in 2012, and, you know, there was a natural reluctance to want to see the first black president. I mean, there was a natural desire to see the first black president succeed and a reluctance to vote against him. But, you know, by 2016, you know, everything is telling you we're on the wrong track. You know, we have terrorism on our streets like you've never seen, and this crappy economy for so many people. Many of the jobs that went away in 2008 never came back in anything like the form that they were in when they left. People have eaten into their savings, into their pensions. They've downsized. I mean, the country is just not in a good place, and people recognize that. The people who are benefiting from globalization and who are, you know, in the circles where the media travels, they're doing very well. Those people are enjoying affluence, but that's just on the coast, and pretty much everybody in between isn't. And that was the reality. And the people in the mainstream press and in the very established conservative media both have lost touch with the reality faced by ordinary people.
Yeah, and, you know,
they still don't get it because they have to come up with this crazy term, white working class, as if, you know, they're aristocrats in Victorian England, you know, looking at the proles. I mean, they just don't get it.
Right,
I saw
personally the rise of Breitbart just with the campaign I was working on in Wisconsin, and I've met Bannon. I've met him in a freaking RV on the side of the road in freaking Wisconsin, and he's a good guy, and it's just amazing that they're trying to accuse him of being anti-Semitic when he works for a place called Breitbart, and he's completely surrounded by intellectual conservative Jewish people. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable what they're accusing him of just because they hate him. And I'm to the point, and I think a lot of others are, that they say the more that the mainstream media rails against somebody, the better that person must be.
Yeah, I mean, we crossed the point of no return on the trust factor. Nobody, unless Trump really stumbles, nobody is going to accept at face value critiques of him by them. They're just not, because the memories of this year are just too strong. The absolute collusion, the cheating.
Yeah, it's amazing to see Wolf Blitzer, and I'm trying to think, like, Stephanopoulos, and those guys keep a straight face and act still. They're still reporting, and I look at them and go, freaking liars. I mean, there's undeniable evidence of all the collusion, and they just report, like, I'm reading my teleprompter, and I am the authoritative, you know, version of everything. It's just there is no shame. There is no, you know, they're just freaking robots.
Well, you know, I got such a kick out of CNN pretending to be shocked and dismayed and scandalized when it was found out that Donna Brazile, who's on their payroll, is feeding Hillary Clinton debate questions, and they're saying, oh, that can't be. And then when they found out that it was true, and then they, you know, in this fit of moralism, they fire her, she's just doing what they wanted.
Sure.
They just got caught.
It's just like, you remember in 1990, was it 1991, when the tanks were driving behind the guy in Iraq, I guess it's the press secretary for Saddam Hussein. And the M1A1 or a Bradley, I can't remember what it was. I can't remember the exact nomenclature, but there was an M1A1 or a Bradley driving right behind him with an American flag flying out of it. And he's like, there are no Americans in Baghdad.
Yeah.
Was that Baghdad Bob?
Exactly.
Yeah,
Baghdad
Bob.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what our press is now.
That's what it is. I mean, it's incredible, and it's gotten so bad that like one group that would never willingly supported a Republican before, they started supporting Republicans in Trump at least in considerable numbers, and that was the whole gay segment of the population.
Right.
Finally, open borders produced that thing in Orlando and related things that are going on in Europe where they're killing gay people. And then they're thinking, oh, maybe what I was taught in school about open borders and multiculturalism is not going to work out too well for me.
And gun control.
And gun control. But, you know, Johnny, I agree with you. I mean, you know, we joked about it, you know, during your show and, you know, prior shows. But you were right. I mean, the fix was in. To me, it was just providential that we dodged this bullet, and I just don't know, how enduring our escape is, but we did have an escape, and to be totally blunt about it, I'm not sure we deserved the escape that we got, but we were lucky because fate brought us a candidate who was almost bulletproof against the media. You know, we've never seen that before.
And the thing is that you know, the left is showing the true colors. We don't like the Electoral College. We don't like the Constitution unless it works for us. And as I brought up in my show, it's all about racism. Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, I mean,
you know, they can only use racism so far. Saturday Night Live was the most blatant. I watched the last two programs on Saturday Night Live before the election and one after the election. And I like David Chappelle, but you can tell who the real racists are after Obama's out. It's like, oh, we lost. Well, now you're in charge. And it's like, who's in charge? Nobody should be in charge.
Right.
This is a constitutional republic. Nobody. That's what we don't want. We don't want a king. No, that's not how it works. And we don't want democracy. A democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what to have for dinner. You know, that's my feeling.
I think the name-calling got so – I mean, now they call somebody – like a joke I heard, how do you know a Democrat is dead? He stops calling you a racist. I mean, you know, it's just gotten to the point where the American people, again, that middle class across racial boundaries, age boundaries, they just got sick of it. And they're like, you know, you're going to – it's like a wife – accusing her husband of fooling around. She accuses him, and he's not fooling around. But he keeps accusing him, and he finally goes, well, screw it. I'm going to go do it, you know? So it's the same thing where everybody's being accused.
Does that give me permission? Wait, whoa. I got an out. Oh,
no,
I ain't got a wife. Okay, I'm good.
You know what I'm saying? It's just that accusation. You guys are all racist. It cowed the American people for decades. Finally, they've said, screw it. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm going to be accused of a racist.
Right.
Racist.
You know,
it doesn't matter.
You cry wolf too often. I mean, it's just people just don't – they stop listening.
Yeah.
And there was an element of, you know, the great Soviet encyclopedia in this whole thing with Comey, which really gave people just such a window – on how the elites in Washington think. Because remember when Comey did his so-called investigation of Hillary and announced his findings in July and said, oh, there was no intent to break the law, and all the Democrats and the liberals and the academics, oh, he's such a statesman, he's so fair, that was such a great investigation, and blah, blah, blah. And then when he reopened it because Hillary's email surfaced on somebody's porn machine, then it was like a complete 180-degree change. He's terrible. He's political. He's trying to throw the election. He's in league with Trump. He's this, that. And then 3 days before the election, he shifts gears again and says, oh, there's nothing really there. We've gone through 650,000 emails in a week, and there's nothing there. Move along.
And
then they started,
here.
Oh, he's statesmanlike.
It's totally Soviet star chamber. Yeah.
Yeah, the totally. Soviet Union when somebody fell out of favor and went to the firing.
Kangaroo court.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah, and right there for everybody to see. Yeah.
The problem is that man is a sinner, and man wants power. And he wants power over other people. No matter how bad it is, he wants power.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you are a politician in my book and you desire this power over another human being, you're nothing more than a rapist. Because a rapist, that's all he desires is power. The first thing a rape counselor will tell you is, well, rapist
control.
Doesn't rape you for power. For the rapist doesn't rape you for sex. The rapist rapes you for power.
Right.
Well, that's
control.
How we need to start looking at these politicians, all of them, and Donald included. And if the American people can figure that out, and I'm sure the Founding Fathers understood that to a point, but if I would have walked into the Continental Congress and I went, y'all rapist, I'm pretty sure they would have threw me out and then shot me. But But you know what I'm saying? I mean, I tell you, I think that's a good point to bring up.
The thing that, you know, where people really have gotten led astray is that a lot of this growth in government power is disguised with all these wonderful sounding words like, you know, common welfare and this and that and help the poor and help the disadvantaged. And but what's happening? I mean, first of all, the disadvantaged are not being helped, as we see with the Clinton Foundation and the rape of Haiti. Nobody gets helped, but people who are feeding with the government are getting very, very affluent. And that's what
right.
we've got to, you know, really...
That's the rapist. That's the rapist.
Yeah, I mean,
or
we've got to really focus on this ability that the left has to, you know, put cosmetics over their power grab and disguise it with all these, you know, wonderful sounding words, you know, free education, free this, social welfare, social justice. And none of that is happening.
Well, that's why the shock of the left now that are protesting the election, these are people that always vote to increase the power of the federal government over the individual. And then they're shocked to find that that power can be given to someone who is against them.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said that for decades. Why do you vote for power, for the federal government to have power over you? You know that the same government that's given you FDR and Clinton and Obama and all these guys you love, it has given you Reagan and Nixon and now Trump. I mean, hello. That's why I don't want the federal government to have any power or very little.
What they will do is they will come back and they'll say, oh, well, we made a mistake with Hillary, but if we put somebody who's more pure like Bernie, things will just be wonderful. And it's like, but that's what you told us when you put Obama in there, and look what happened there.
Right, but that's what they always say. If we just had the right leadership, socialism would work, and it never works. It fails every time, even in Venezuela.
If we just had the correct rapist,
right.
Yeah, exactly. We just need the right rapist. We had white rapists all this time. We had a black rapist. We need a woman rapist. Oh, that didn't work. Let's just put this rapist in there. I mean, really, it's so ludicrous to think about it. I think it's great to think about it. And I didn't come up with that term, the rapist. I think it was, I have a friend called the consigliere. And mm-hmm. politicians rape you by, you know, property taxes.
Right.
You don't own property. Like your guns, you don't own your property. That's typically a politician is nothing more than a rapist. He's going to take from you to give somebody else, except for usually the rapist turns out to be the one that wins every time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think what you call a politician rapist. I like that. Let's do that.
And they really don't like
and
that.
In the case of Bill Clinton, that is literally true.
Yeah.
If the stories are to be believed.
Yeah,
well,
you just brought up a great thing. No, Clinton actually did the physical act. Trump talked about it, right? Well, who did they vilify? They vilified Trump, and they raised Clinton as a hero who actually abused freaking interns abusing his power in the White House. I mean, in untold times that we don't know about. Trump talks a big game, and because of his speech, they attack him. But the actions of Clinton, they just totally ignore.
Yeah, it was so funny when Hillary based her campaign on this stolen, which it was. I mean, he was taped without his consent. Audio tape from that, you know, Hollywood show or whatever it was, a van, I guess it was where he was in when he, you know, was telling them about grabbing them by the you know what. And that was legitimate. But when WikiLeaks is, you know, hacking her emails. Oh, that's totally different. How could you? It's unthinkable. It's immoral.
I'm shocked to find you found my emails.
In Free Fire Friday is shock because we don't say things like that.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, so I wanted to just briefly go into the one remaining subject, which is now that Trump has won, what do the people vote for him do? And my, reaction to that is wait and see, because, you know, we wanted a CEO, we picked a CEO, and we have to be kind of like the board of directors, you know, kind of watch things, but he's got to make a lot of decisions, and he's going to need time. We can't be there in the blogosphere, you know, having convulsions and clutching our pearls over every little thing that he does not match our preferences exactly. And there are a lot of people in the righty blogosphere who are going to do just that. Every little thing is going to be major drama. Oh, he's betraying his voters, he's betraying conservatism, he's betraying his campaign promises. You know, my view on that is chill. Wait for the big picture to emerge. It will take a couple of years. And then, you know, if I'm sure we will have moved in the right direction, and if we don't move far enough, you know, maybe he won't run again, maybe he can be replaced. But you know, there's a lot of drama that goes on in the blogosphere, and I think that as consumers of social media, we need to be a lot more assertive about telling some of these drama queens, enough, enough. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about, oh, you think so-and-so's a racist, or you think so-and-so is betraying conservatism or this or that or the other thing. I don't want to hear it. And, you know, we mm-hmm. should be very assertive with pushback.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say I am one of the drama queens because I already heard Donald Trump say, well, I didn't mean a wall. I meant like a fence, and it turns out to be a drone. And I tend to hold people. I mean,
it can be a drone, it can be a wall, it can be fence, it can be an electrified thing.
But my point being is, do what you say, and say what you do. If you're not going to do it, don't say it. So that's where I hold the line on politicians. Hey, if you're not going to fucking build a wall, don't tell me you're going to build a wall. Tell me you're going to have a drone out there. You're going to, you know, don't lie to me. So that's how I do. I hold politicians to a high. I hold the rapist. I hold the rapist to a very high standard. You're going to rape me? Good. Or you're not going to rape me at all.
Oh.
Yeah, that's how I go. I don't like it like that.
Well, here the temperature's dropped to 66 degrees, so I have to go back inside.
The test of the wall will be whether does illegal immigration go down? That is my test. And go down substantially. So, you know, we may have differences in, you know, how we interpret things, but you know, I'm not talking so much about what Johnny just said. I'm talking about the crap that I see on Twitter and Facebook. So, hey, gentlemen, we only have 60 seconds to go. So, like I said, I'm gonna close on time tonight because I have to work tomorrow. So thanks for dropping in, and for people who are listening in archive, Johnny and Richard are on Free Fire Friday night, 8 o'clock Central Time. Hope everybody has a nice weekend, and I'll probably do a holiday show the Friday after Thanksgiving, so look forward to seeing all of you then. So, guys, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
Take care, Tomatoes.
Thanks. Good show.
Good show. Excellent.